The Culture Pop Podcast is brought to you by the law offices of Jacob Imrani.
Accident or injury, call Jacob Imrani, call Jacob.
Hey, it's Mace. If you or a friend or loved one is injured in an accident, the first person you should call is my friend Jacob. When I did this, Jacob was great. He helped me by talking through the next steps, which really put my mind at ease. When you're injured in an accident, you got to have an expert. That's why you call Jacob, just like I did. Call Jacob, 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB, or visit calljacob.com.
Call Jacob.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Culture Pop Podcast. I'm Steve Mason, along with Sue Kalinske. This is the show where we talk about everything happening in pop culture. And right now, it is the series Sugar, which is on Apple Plus. We're doing a watch-along series. Going to talk about episode 6 right now. Sugar continues his search for Olivia. But this is the episode that changes everything, because John Sugar is not who he seemed to be, Sue.
Yes, so all the theories of, is he AI? Is he undead? Is he an alien?
Yes.
Has now surfaced.
Yes. Now, I believe... Now, I is it not obvious now that he is an alien? Do you feel it's obvious?
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to make sure.
I mean, when your body goes green and your eyes... like slit and become blue all of a sudden.
Right. Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure we didn't think this was weird AI or something like that. Weird monster AI.
Well, you know, with this show, you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
Is this another like weird twist? I don't know.
Yeah. Right. We got a great guest coming up, Alex Hernandez, who's been on the show. But I wanted to touch on one thing. So I'm watching the show, and it starts out with Sugar intercutting with a movie called Night of the Hunter. Do you know this movie?
I do.
Robert Mitchum has this speech about love and hate and love always. But really, he's playing a serial killer posing as a preacher. Mm-hmm. So my interpretation is that Sugar sees himself as pretending to be human when he's really something else. Does that make sense with that clip?
It makes a lot of sense. And then, of course, when, you know, you see both of his hands and he has hate on one hand and love on the other hand, because that's what Sugar, he's struggling with that love-hate thing. You know, he's telling people he doesn't want to hurt them. I'm not this guy. He feels bad when he hurts people. So you see that struggle. And then also what was very interesting, how he took that gun out of the case, which Ruby gave him.
Yes.
And he's never taken a weapon with him.
Right.
And he takes it out and he looks at it and they intercut back and forth with the love and hate. And then when Robert Mitchum says, love wins out, he puts the gun back.
Beautiful. Didn't know that. That's beautiful. I mean, there is so much artistry in this show. There really is. I mean, it looks great. The clips, if you go back and you figure out, like, did you know that was Night of the Hunter? I had to go back and look.
No, I did know. Yeah.
Yeah, I did not know. But I mean, the way those clips are used, the way it's shot, the way the director, Fernando Marias, has a mix of steady cam and shaky cam, handheld stuff. It's just beautiful to watch. Beautiful
yeah,
to watch.
Yeah, and I think the intercutting of this particular scene was really more potent than any other scene that he introduced into the show.
Because
you saw how he intercut the struggle back and forth. It was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, it was. So here we go. Joining us for the show is actor Alex Hernandez. He's appeared on shows like Devious Maids and Dallas and True Detective in the OA. And in Sugar, he is a season regular. He plays David Siegel's body man, Kenny. Alex Hernandez here. Alex, thanks a lot for coming on, man.
100%. No worries. Thanks for having me.
So this is such a great show. We are just blown away by the show. And of course, we get the big twist in episode 6. But I wanted to ask you how you found yourself on this show. How did they find you for your role on Sugar?
So I actually worked with the producers on a different Apple TV Plus show called Invasion. And we were shooting during the pandemic, which obviously was a really auspicious time for everyone in every industry, but entertainment especially. And yeah, our production was halted and there was this big kerfuffle. And somehow we made it all work. We got back to work. And obviously things had shifted a little bit. Like that was a huge wrench in the production pipeline. So there were all these issues trying to get the show off the ground. And yeah, fortunately, I made a couple of concessions that sort of made it work. So they didn't have to recast me, which was great for me, but also good for them. And a couple years went by and Sugar came along and I was reached out to and I said, I mean, I love Colin Farrell. I think he's brilliant. I think he's one of the most interesting and simplest actors that I see on screen. And I say simple as a point of pride. Like he's just so easy. And when they said, hey, there's this role and, you know, it'll develop over time. But I was like, anything to work with Colin Farrell. I'm down. So the producers reached out and yeah, it all worked out.
So it's been such a whirlwind as a spectator watching this with all the theories of who he is. And so it came to fruition in this season, in this series, in this episode. So I want to know, how much did you know about what was going on with Sugar as an actor? Did you know from the beginning?
In the beginning, nothing. Literally nothing. And I think it's very common practice to sort of keep things under wraps, which I think is probably a good idea. And things change over time, right? I would say around the time that we were shooting the second block, which is episodes 3 and 4, there were little rumblings that were like, hey, this is kind of the thing. There were some plot points that were supposed to happen in the third block, 5 and 6, that suddenly were different. And I was just like, hey, the script is like significantly different than what I was given 2 weeks ago. And they were like, yeah, it's, by the way, like mum's the word. And so of course then you sort of carry that forward and are like, oh, things are very different. This yeah. is wildly different than what I was given the impression this was in the beginning, which is kind of fun, to be honest, as an actor, because you want to be taken on the same sort of ride as the audience. And if you know too much in the beginning, you run the risk of sort of playing the hand, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes it's better to be kept in the dark until you really truly need to know.
Because I think, you know, the one thing about surprises or twists is that they need to be fair. There should be indications along the way that when it happens, you're like, oh, yeah, he did that. And I went right back to episode 1 and he snatched a fly out of the air with chopsticks. And I thought, well, that sort of feels superhuman, invincible kind of thing. I thought that was like the first clue that he was different. What do you think?
Absolutely. And I think that's such a brilliant little Easter egg, because that moment happened in the pilot and I was watching it with my wife and she was like, what the hell? Like she laughed at first and thought it was just sort of a quirky idiosyncrasy. But then she immediately was like, that's a really odd thing for a person to be able to do. And I was like, yeah, it is, isn't it? Because I was like, I don't want to ruin it for you, right? And I think there are other fun moments along the way. Even the way that Sugar's personality manifests and is sort of like almost preternatural obsession with cinema and human behavior.
Yes.
And the amount of kindness he wants to put in the world. Like his interactions with Carl, the homeless man with the dog. My wife was like, you know, I love everything, but that just seems so not like a real person. Everything else is great. And I was like, it does seem not like a real person. It seems a little odd. And all of those little Easter eggs, I think they really beautifully wove in to this otherwise very film noir, heavy, you know, whispery kind of vibe. And there are just these little things that you're like, why is he so chipper in this regard? Or like, what is that affect about? And I really love it. And I think his performance, the way he does it, again, is very subtle and easy, which is one of the reasons I think he's such a brilliant actor.
Yeah, there seemed to be something kind of childlike about his character, the curiosity, you know, like he was kind of learning along the way how to be a detective and to somewhat be human. But he was so cute and sweet, and you don't usually associate that with a private eye.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that Mark, the show creator and writer, did so brilliantly. Like film noir, detective noir is its own genre and it comes with all the tropes of the genre, right? And I think what he does is he plays into some of them. Like he allows it to live in the space that it is, but he also subverts them by virtue of, for example, like that relationship with Amy Ryan, like sort of tropically, when she invites him in and she's drunk, it's supposed to be the scene where they consummate whatever attraction they have in lust, right? But instead, we don't go down that route. They continue to further their relationship, but it's not based in that sexuality, which normally in that genre is like 100%. James Bond is going to sleep with the Bond girl. That's what you want. And instead, I think, you know, hopefully we're in an age of culture where those things, they're subverted and we're pleased by that. We are actually fulfilled by, like, not every narrative needs to play out exactly as we expected it to. And in fact, there's joy in that. I want to watch that relationship more, because if they were just going to sleep together, great. I've seen that a thousand times. Like,
yeah,
and suddenly
yeah.
She diminished. The character becomes less important because you go, well, yeah, you did the thing I expected you to do. And instead, both of them now are richer as a result.
Yeah. You know, I love that Los Angeles is a character in this show. I mean, there's a line, turn the world on its side and everything loose falls to LA, which I love. But I mean, you've got a legendary producer, a former child star, an old rock and roller. I mean, it really is about LA in a meaningful way, I think.
Absolutely. And even the way that they shoot it, sort of these flashes of establishing shots of, you know, like, let's say the bar, or as he's driving, particularly being a New Yorker and seeing like Sugar riding along in this old retro car along along the backdrop of Los Angeles. That's such a quintessentially California LA thing, but it also fits into the genre of detective noir. Like I love how they're marrying all of these different things. It's almost a love letter and an indictment of Los Angeles at the same time, which I think is perfectly apt. LA is a wonderful, amazing place, also full of many awful people and like a lot of opportunity for that. And the beauty of it juxtaposed against the awfulness of what's going on is, I think, really beautiful.
Yeah, there was one shot in this past episode where Charlie is surveilling Stallings' house, and through her binoculars, you see the grasshopper kind of come in and out of view inside the binoculars, and it was like a kaleidoscope kind of like feel to it. It was such an interesting shot.
It's one of the things, Cesar, the DP, the director of photography, he does a lot of stuff that's handheld, but when we were on set, they would often just sort of derive inspiration, which I think is one really unheard of in television shooting, because everything's so like, go, 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 we just need to make our day. And I think Apple was really smart as a studio, and both Audrey and Simon as producers, to allow them the freedom to be like, hey, I just thought of something right now in this moment. Go get the handheld camera. Come here. Like, get this right now. Just grab this, right? And Cesar was so about like that handheld feel. One, because it's really intimate cinematography. Just the fact that the camera's not locked off and stayed on one shot, it tells you that it's human. It's imperfect. But that makes it more interesting, because these little tiny shakes that are happening. But also, you have the ability to interact organically with what actors are doing with their blocking. So of course, as actors, like, you want to hit your marks and you want to hit certain things, but it allows for inspiration on both sides, where if I suddenly just want to stand up, oh, see, now you lost me. But if we're here on a L, you just come with me. And yeah, maybe it's a little surprising and stuff's out of focus for a quick second, but that's also interesting as an audience, because you go, oh, that was real. Like, the fact that was out of focus, that for half a second, that's real. And I think there's also something about Sugar's mind and the way that they do storytelling in the show. All those quick cuts of all this stuff that's kind of frenetic is how his brain, as we find out in episode 6, is like processing, learning, and like how much information he takes in and soaks up as a character, I find fascinating. It's just not really how television's usually shot. It's much more cinematic and filmic than it is like a television series.
So you play David's kind of his body man, for lack of a better term. And there's a scene in episode 6 where Davies, he's going to die, or they're going to let him go. Bernie says that we're going to let him go. And one of the things he says is, with David, too much, too soon, too easy, and get born into all this. You get more and more. It's not all his fault. It's kind of the danger of being a Nepo baby, I think. It's kind of a good summary of that.
Absolutely. And I think I've always said that fame is not good or bad. Fame magnifies what you already are. And I think in David's situation, unfortunately, like Bertie says, it's too much too soon. Like, you're given everything in the world. You're given all the money, all the power, all the access. And if you don't have the sort of self-control and the evolvement to handle that, then yeah, it becomes tempting to just sort of order one of everything off the menu. In fact, I'll take the whole restaurant. Like, and that mentality, I think, is really dangerous. And again, I appreciate that the show sort of, it goes in. It doesn't really stray away from the fact that that amount of largesse, like, it really, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And you see it in this family. And even in the way they relate to each other over the events is really telling, like how fractured they are emotionally, their inability to carry on long-term relationships, their inability to even communicate within their own nuclear family, I find very telling.
I couldn't tell whether when Bernie and his wife found out that David was still alive, I couldn't tell whether Bernie was sad about it or happy about it. Because he said he's alive. Like, because obviously, you know, David knew a lot of stuff, you know, and whatever else we're going to find out, in some ways, was it a good thing for the Seagulls for David not to be around anymore? I mean, that's what I'm curious about. So I'm not asking you to tell me anything, you know, but it's just a curiosity thing for me. What about you, Steve? What do you think about that?
You know, I didn't know, because he went and he broke down with James Cromwell. I think that there's probably a mix with Bernie, right? Because it sounds like Davey, you know, he was helping to hide the women and those stories, and maybe, you know, and that was a huge burden, and maybe there was some level of relief. But I thought the fact that he broke down with Jonathan, his father, afterwards was, you know, he suffered a real loss here, obviously, or was about to suffer a real loss. You know, now I heard the word mission. It's a mission now. Ruby said it. And somehow Olivia ties into this mission. Like Sugar says, there's someone we're protecting. And Ruby says, it's all for the greater good. I think this is some sort of alien mission. And at another point, she said, he wouldn't approve of our methods now. I think he said that in episode 5 or episode 4. So now you've got this dynamic of, well, alien mission. He's an alien. They have Olivia. Where do we go from here? Is that a pretty good summary, Alex?
I think you're spot on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's intentionally a little bit like, is it good or bad? I think we should be questioning whether or not Bernie's motivations are entirely paternal, I'll say.
Yes. Yes.
Well, what's interesting is when they introduced the polyglot group, the secret society, and then I looked up what it meant. It wasn't only the fact that they speak a lot of languages. It was also that groups of people from different countries got together it said actually to do good or bad. To do good or bad. So, yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, figure out this connection with the Seagulls.
So, Alex, you know where it goes, right?
You know, I will neither confirm nor deny. I don't want to ruin it.
He's taking the fifth.
Taking the fifth. It's on the last page of my contract. Do not say any.
There you go. There you go. Well, you haven't given us anything that would spoil episode 7 or beyond. But this has been great. It's great to get your perspective. It's a great show. We totally dig watching it. You're great in it. Thanks a lot for coming on, Alex.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
There you have it, Alex Hernandez. And yeah, so Olivia, this is my interpretation now. Stallings kidnapped Olivia. Somehow the secret society is involved in that. We know it's like an alien mission. And for some reason, Olivia is being held by aliens. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah. And what are they planning to do with her? I mean, if she was kidnapped by aliens, can you make someone an alien?
Well, I mean, there's a mission, right? Ruby's talked about a mission.
Yeah, yeah, and it's for the greater good.
For the greater good. That means Olivia's in a bad spot, and it means that Colin Farrell, I love the reference to L.A. Confidential.
I know.
Because he says, what's L.A. Confidential? It's about betrayal.
Betrayal.
And that's exactly what has happened here. So Ruby and the rest of them have betrayed him. And he, by the way, says over and over again, they told me not to get too close to this case. And
right.
Somehow this is going to be the thing that unravels everything.
I don't know if you noticed this, and it was so weird because I actually watched the episode again because I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
When he was in the hotel room with Henry,
mm-hmm.
When his body, you know, he was shirtless, and in the crux of his arm, you saw a little bit of green.
Oh, really?
Yes. And then when he got up.
Yep.
You could see a little bit of green, like on his shoulder and on his arm.
Mm.
And it was so subtle. It kind of looked like faint, like magic marker.
Right.
Little
Having
ears.
Ear problems? There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Little ears. Some people
little
have
ears.
Little feet. Little feet.
Who's got
ears.
Small ears? Well,
anyway,
I think that's good.
So,
yeah, I think yeah. That's good. There is episode 6 of Sugar, and can't wait to see where it goes. It's funny. It was one thing. Now it's going to be something different. Fascinating. Fascinating. Mm. Hey, thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, if you're listening on Apple or on Spotify, please subscribe to the channel. Leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button. Then leave us any kind of theories you've got about what's going on and Sugar in the comments section. You can do that. We will be back next week with episode 7. God knows where we will be. We will find out. Thanks, everybody, for watching the Culture Pop podcast and listening.